What's up, Beast Blaze? December 14, 2020. So, F1 season's over. This will be the last one of these, probably for a while. An unremarkable race at Abu Dhabi, which is like supposedly a bad track and bad for passing. And it's funny because it's a Herman Tilke racetrack. He has like certain things he does, which is long straightaways and a heavy braking, serpentine, like long, kind of fast turns a la Maggots and Becketts, and then like these like big turns, kind of like Parabolica or Curva Grande, more like Parabolica, where they start with a wide angle of turn and get narrower, so you have to like slow down in your turn, you know, and then tight like more than 180 degree turns, followed by like kind of chicane type, not exactly chicane but close, like so the left right idea, and wide. So Herman Tilke designed, I think the first one was in Malaysia, like specifically because to encourage passing. It's funny. He designed tracks he thought would allow for more passing, because one of the reasons passing is a problem is that in F1 is that the tracks are too narrow and the cars are too wide. They're monstrously wide. And if you ever see like a Lamborghini Countach or some Ferrari up close, it's like weirdly wide car. Why? Stability in turns. You don't want long and tall, that'll fall over, right? So you want a car that's able to like kind of go on its side a little bit and not flip, a la the exact opposite of a Suzuki Samurai. I've had a friend who had one. He was always trying to tell us how awesome it was because, it's in Africa. It's like very commonly used in Africa. Like those people are poor. And then the reasoning was that you could pick it up out of the dirt. It's like four dudes can pick it up. Bro, what? This is America. We drive on paved roads. All these 4x4s, when I lived in Maryland, you're like, there's about like a month. There's like a couple days a year on average, other than my sophomore and junior years in high school. You'd really be able to use this thing. Whatevs. So, but yeah, he made these tracks that were supposed to be like passing tracks. Didn't really work out. And I think it's for the passing issues actually come in for a couple reasons. Yeah, Monaco. Monaco is an impossible racetrack. Okay, like people complain about Abu Dhabi. Like, oh, it's a boring track. It's fun to drive in a video game. Like, it's not a bad track in a video game. It's really strange because it feels like two distinct repeating patterns. So it feels like you go through pattern one, pattern two, finish. But pattern one, pattern two are like, it's like you go through one little area and you go through another area that's like very similar. It's weird. But it's a fun track to drive. It's just fun. Like, here's another issue with it. It does like kind of, it makes you feel like you're just starting and stopping a lot. It's weird. I like running it, but it does have like some drawbacks. I would say like a really fun race is Silverstone. That's like a fun track to video game on. Monaco is the opposite of fun. It's terrible. I was so excited to race that track, and now I understand why it's not in Forza, or you have to buy it separately. It's not cool. You would just be frustrated by it. Now, I don't know what it'd be like to drive a smaller, slower car. Like, let's say, a 1950 sports car. Right? That track's been around for, 100 years. And at the time, the cars were narrower. Very much. And shorter. They were way smaller. Keep in mind that even in the 1960s. So, originally, these cars were all front engine. And someone figured out it's easier to balance the car with rear engine. Now, a Corvette had a perfect 50-50 balance. And it was a front-engine car because they put the transmission in the back. Because usually the engine attaches directly to the transmission. Well, in this case, they just put the transmission in the back and had, okay, you get the same effect, right? Well, in F1, in a lot of, not all, but a lot, there's of European sort of supercars, they're all what's called mid-engine. So quick explanation here. Front engine, engine in the front. So I'm going to take another step back. Front engine, engine in the front. Rear engine, engine behind the rear wheels. Mid-engine, engine between them. So front on top of the front wheels. A rear engine car, the engine's actually behind the rear wheels. And in mid-engine, it's between the wheels. Then there's front wheel, rear wheel, and all-wheel drive, and four-wheel drive. Okay, front wheel drive, wheels in the front drive the car. For everyday purposes, this is really what you want. It does a little bit better in snow. It does a little bit better in as far as you not losing control and killing yourself. It's more stable. If you're a beginner at video games, racing video games, I would recommend you use a front engine car. You're less likely in a turn to lose control. So it took me a long time to learn how to drive real wheel cars in video games, as silly as it sounds. Also, remember, these aren't sports cars. That you go out and buy a front engine rear drive car, which a lot of older cars were. Like, you look at like classic cars, they're almost all in that configuration. One, it's like easier to do for some reason. It's like cheaper. And two, it actually gets a better performance. Why? Because when the car accelerates, tilts back onto the back wheels and gives it more traction. However, in certain situations, if you're turning too fast, you go, oh no, I'm turning too fast, I'm going to let go of the gas a little bit. There is, if you do that incorrectly, you will spin out because you'll lose grip on the rear tires. And the thing, but the front tires will hold grip and it'll just spin about. That happened to me. My first car was front engine, rear drive, probably about 60% of the weight, 70% of the weight on the front. I'm coming out of a turn out of Mount Hebron neighborhood, the exit right by 99 intersection. And I turn the wheel a little too hard. And I'm like, whoa, doggy. I let go of the accelerator to like gain control. But that would work in a front wheel drive car. And a rear wheel drive car, it resulted in fishtailing and I was able to get control of the car. But I could have just as easily like spun in a circle and, you know, so there you have it. Okay, so they originally were these front engine tiny cars. They like barely any, no seat belts. The dudes didn't even wear helmets. Wear these leather hats and like goggles. And someone figured out mid engine. It gets easier to balance it. Okay, fine. Up until like the 90s, the driver's feet were at the very front of the car. So if you did anything more, you had about like a few inches of clearance, your feet were right there. So any kind of like front end axe mishap, your legs would get crushed. So that increased the length of the car because they said like, hey, we can't have the end of the car be the guy's feet. Right? We're shredding people's legs. So they added like a note. So that makes it longer and then it gets wider as it's more stable and so on and so forth. And they're massive cars. Just out of point of reference, you're like, rear engine, why would you do that? It gives you more room in the cockpit. Buses are rear engine, like, you know, city bus. Those are rear engine vehicles because it's actually the best way to configure a vehicle to get the most space inside. You're not worried about, now, rear engine gives you way more grip on the rear tires. So as, again, is an idea, like the amount of weight you put on the tires increases the grip. That's why aerodynamics is such a big deal in race cars, sports cars, stuff like that, like spoilers. They push the tires into the road, giving them more grip, which, and it might seem odd, but you're like, wait, but I want I want a sports car to be light. Yeah, you do. Because you want it, a heavy car will give you the same effect, but it'll accelerate slower because as you get higher speed, the drag increases. So it gets harder to hit higher and higher speeds. But at low, you're going to get a lot of low-end acceleration because aerodynamics really don't kick into full effect about 30 miles an hour. So that first 30 miles an hour is free. Second, on braking, a heavy car, yeah, you get the same amount of grip as an aero, but on braking, you're going to have a problem that the aero car doesn't. Why not rear engine? Well, once you lose control, it becomes impossible to get it back because it takes, the grip is so high that as you're going through this sort of peel out phase, you don't really have an opportunity. It's like, I don't know how to explain it properly. I really don't. It's just basically like you have so much grip, it's holding on so tight that when it finally does burst, it explodes in a loss of control. Now, Porsche teaches people how to drive their 911s, which is the last, I think that and a Volkswagen Beetle, the only cars that still use a rear engine configuration. I don't think they'll ever stop just because it's like iconic. It used to be air-cooled, but they ran into a problem with how much power you can really generate out of an air-cooled engine in a car. Now, World War II airplanes had air-cooled engines for the most part. I mean, a P-51 Mustang did not. The problem with a liquid-cooled combat aircraft engine is that one bullet will knock the engine out, whereas an air-cooled engine, you could lose a couple of pistons. Like these radial air-cooled engines, you know, the ones that, like, have that, it looks like there's no cover on the engine, because there isn't. That's how it's cooled. Each individual piston's being air-cooled. You can do that and generate a lot of power. You can't do that in a car. Anyway, they got to the mid-engine. They've gotten huge. Monaco, not designed for it. They can't widen Monaco because it's a city. It's city streets. And it's so iconic and everything that they don't really want to change it. So Hermann Tilke's race tracks are like a response to it, right? Which is funny because, again, it's not just the track that's causing these problems. Another issue, I think, with passing is that there is a lot of passing. It just doesn't happen at the front. Everybody cares the most about who wins the race. Until you get to be like a pretty decent fan of F1, you're going to be like, you care about who wins. My first couple years of watching it, I'm watching these races, all I care about is who finishes first. Well, it actually doesn't really work that way. Because in F1, the more fun part of F1, because the front runners tend to front run so hard, is actually watching the mid-pack. It's actually races. Like I used to be like, why are they showing the race for eighth place? Like, why am I interested in who's in eighth? Because it's more fun to watch. And I think there's a few reasons. One of these is a few reasons for this. One is aero. The aero causes, if you're following someone really close, it causes you temperature problems and you have to back off. And the way that F1 is, they're so close to each other. And if you're faster than someone on a particular day, you're faster by, you know, fractions of a second per lap. And so it takes you a few laps to get by them. So you don't just need to be faster than someone. You need to be way faster. Secondly, you're getting these overtime problems when you're following in someone's wake. Having that clean air out in front of you is a huge advantage because you can just run your race. You're not reacting to everybody else around you. And this is why I think it's a great allegory for real life. When you're a billionaire, you're not worried about what other people are doing. You're just going, do your thing. Bill Gates, perfect example of this. Like, I don't want to work at Microsoft anymore. I'm going to go, like, you know, do my charity thing, and it's going to be, I want to get everybody vaccinated. And so, but it's the same idea. You're out there, you're in front, you're hard to catch, generally speaking. I mean, especially say that about like Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, arguably the two best drivers on the track today. They're both what you would say like Pantheon. They're definitely Hall of Famers. In my definition of it, is anyone that's ever won a championship is Hall of Fame. If you haven't, probably not. But there's like a pantheon of greats. So like same thing like football. There's this Hall of Fame football player like Andre Rison or something, but it's not like Jerry Rice and Randy Moss level. There's different levels to everything, but I would argue Sebastian Vettel is at the highest level of guys. You could argue that, like, you can make arguments about whether Michael Schumacher or Lewis Hamilton are better drivers, et cetera, et cetera. You can, like, sit there and pick apart stats and say, like, well, the guy won 8, has 5 world championships, but he only raced for 8 years, and one of those years he was out with an injury. So the guy won 5 out of 7 times he tried, right? Like Perez this year came in 4th and didn't race 2 races due to COVID. So there you go. But anyway, the season's over, and we're not – next year – they were supposed to get a new formula for next year, but it's not going to happen because of COVID. So we're going to see an 8th Lewis Hamilton championship, almost 100% chance. I would bet, you know, normally if you bet things before the season, like, you can get good odds on things that are likely to happen. Like, if everyone is like, dude, this is it, this year is going to be like the Bengals year, or the Browns year to win the Super Bowl, everyone's convinced of it. And, but preseason, you're still going to get like 20-1 odds. You know, like, you bet $1, you win 20. I would bet that trying to put money on Lewis Hamilton to win the championship next year is the opposite. Like, you're going to have to bet $10 to win $1. It's that. Almost, like, it is as close to a certainty in sports as it gets. Like, it's one of those games where Alabama plays Louisiana Tech University for the, you know, at Ridgewater or whatever. I made it up. Although Appalachian State, an FCS team, once beat a bowl series team famously in college football. But whatever, it's almost certain that we'll get that. He won. Bottas came in 2nd, which was pretty much going to happen. Max Verstappen came in 3rd. Perez came in 4th. And then Ricciardo came in 5th. And then, you know, litany of other suckers in the back. I will say this. Perez doesn't have a seat in a car yet, and Albon does right now, and that is a crime against humanity. Alexander Albon has failed as a Red Bull driver, pure and simple. The guy, I can't think he finished 8th. He didn't even finish top 6, and there was no second. There was only 2 teams. He should have finished 4th. Let me put it that way. He should have finished 4th. He finished 8th or 9th or 10th or whatever. He sucks. And I would get rid of him. And he's like, yeah, you know, I did what I could on this race to, like, show that I'm a... Dude, you came in 4th while your teammate won. And granted, the people that beat you were, shall we say, the people that are supposed to beat you. But still, bro. If I were Red Bull, I would drop Albon and pick up Perez. Perez not only came in 4th, but came in 4th having missed 2 races due to COVID and DNF'd on his last race. That's so it's like, and I don't know, he might have had more DNFs. So 3 zeros, like, kind of out of his control. He DNF'd due to engine something. So he had 3 not to do with Perez failures, and he still manages to come in 4th. Now, if he had those races, he would have just been more 4th. He would not have beat Max Verstappen. He's actually even won a race this year. There's only like 3 people, I think, that won races this year that weren't Mercedes-Benz. 4 races. Max Verstappen won 2. Perez won 1. And Pierre Gasly won 1. So that's where this guy is. And somehow you're going to keep Alexander Albon, who is a just an underperformer. Right? Nothing against the guy. I'm sure he's a fine fellow and all that. He's not like one of these characters that I find to be kind of like, ugh. Not a huge fan of Magnussen. Not a huge fan of Romain Grosjean. Not a huge fan of Lance Stroll. There's no like hate here. There's no like character in this show that I despise. But anyway, I think I'm not a huge fan of Perez, to be honest. But he's as a personality. But he can drive a car probably better than anyone else. McLaren came in third. It's one of those cases where it should have been Racing Point, because they lost 15 points, which is a lot for a mid-pack team, due to the brake duct issue. And they had a replacement driver for two races. So, you know, whatevs. Like, but I think they're a good team, and I think next year, look out. That battle for third was really the only real compelling thing. You knew who was going to be last. You knew who was going to be second to last. You knew who was going to be third to last. You knew who was going to be number one, and you knew who was going to be number two almost out the gate. Then you had like another two teams, so Williams, Haas, and Alfa Romeo are just going to be like one, you know, last, second to last, third to last, just the way it is. Mercedes and Red Bull, like early on, you figured out. As soon as that Ferrari fell out, you were like, okay, they're done. AlphaTauri is not going to, it was just like, they're okay. Even though they won a race, they weren't as consistent. And then you had Ferrari, who was like not going to lose to Alfa Romeo or AlphaTauri, but they weren't even competitive. They weren't really a mid-pack team. Really, if you look at like Ferrari and below, those are all like trailers. You know, it's like in that order, like Ferrari. And it wasn't 100% apparent where Ferrari and AlphaTauri were gonna hit, but it was, Williams is just non-competitive at all. Haas became non-competitive. They had some issues even with last year, and then that was it. So really, the only thing you were looking at, it was a battle between Renault, McLaren, and Racing Point. And it came down to like the last race. And in the last race, Racing Point drops a car, and that was it. It was pretty much like, okay, guys, all you got to do is score a little bit more than Stroll, and they did it. They came in fifth and sixth, and they got it. Now, if you were to, they won by like 7 points. So if you took away that penalty was a major deciding factor. Now, it's not the only it's not like, oh, well, if it weren't for that penalty, Racing Point wins. But they knew that penalty didn't show up at the end, Deus Ex Machina. That's been around for a while. They knew that. And they still had a DNF in the last race. It was like, okay. Right? Like, that's part of this, huge part of this. So, you know, season's over. Looking forward to next, like, more normal season, like maybe no more masks on everybody. And you know, they did pretty, supposedly they conducted 76,000 COVID tests. They were testing them constantly, like everybody in the teams, and they formed like little bubbles, so they weren't really allowed to go out or do anything like that. Of course, the drivers and some other top people can skirt those rules, as is done. But for the regular person, they're probably like kind of sequestered and locked away. And it worked, which is unsurprising. 78 positive total tests. And two drivers. I think two drivers? Yeah. So, anyway, season's over. Next season's going to probably be a lot the same. What I would, another funny thing you could do, I was talking to a friend of mine, is you get rid of Lewis Hamilton. Mercedes-Benz can win another championship without Lewis Hamilton. The car is so good that George Russell, who finishes like second to last in every race in a Williams, would have won or had a very good chance of winning. They put the wrong tires on his car, and he had to pit again, which is a 20-second penalty. So, and that puts you in traffic, and it just, you're hosed. So, plus there's like a mental aspect to it. So what I'm saying is, you could probably get rid of Lewis, not pay him all that money, just have George Russell there. If you're Toto Wolff, that's what you want, because then you're going to look like the genius. It's not going to be just like, oh, you're a genius, but you have this awesome driver. The following year, you're like, yeah, we got rid of like Mr. Awesome. We got Mr. No One, and Mr. No One won the title, and we still won a Constructors' Championship. So it's like the Belichick who wins the divorce kind of thing. I don't think they'll do it, because from Mercedes' point of view, you want Lewis Hamilton to be your ambassador. You want that guy to be going on his Instagram and putting your, you know, driving around his like fancy Mercedes and all that. All right. Thanks for listening. Love you. Bye.